This is part two of Carl Wilson speaking to the Maine Board of Pesticide Control, April 18, 2014, on lobsters, the impact of pesticides on them. This is 10 minutes long.
So, the lobster life cycle, the only way that a lobster can grow is through molting. And so, vulnerable stages, the bell is probably the most vulnerable stage would be any time a lobster molts. There's a lot of biological events happening. If you think of a lobster and a lobster claw, a lobster has to be able to completely pull its large claw through its smallest joint in its arm in order to molt. And so it's doing a lot of biological processes just in preparation for it, and then as it's laying down a new shell underneath its existing shell, from what I understand in our E-racks back in the day for Dimolin and West Nile E-racks. It's been 15 years. You start to accumulate these like badges. So it seems to me that at the time of molting, that's very a key point of our life history. And then there's also different kind of habitat uses as the lobster grows and develops. So we have an ovigerous female, what we call an egg-bearing lobster, that releases eggs and what we call pre-larvae up into the water column. And those larvae undergo three metamorphoses, stage one, two, and three, what are true larvae. And then the fourth stage is what we call a planktonic post-larvae. And this is a fully formed lobster. It's just in the water column, generally on the surface. And it's these lobsters that actively settle down to the bottom and work at the University of Maine in the 80s and 90s, really determined that it's shelter-providing habitat that seems to attract these lobsters.
What's the basic size of the...
the larvae here?
Yeah.
So we're talking total length of about 1 centimeter, 10 mils.
Yeah.
Where a post larvae that settles its carapace is about 5 millimeters, 5, 6, 7 millimeters. A legal size lobster is 83 millimeters. And when a lobster molts, it's growing cubically.
Yeah.
So the volume of a 5 millimeter lobster is very different than the volume of a 5 millimeter or 10 millimeter lobster. So these post larvae settle down to the bottom into shelter providing habitats. We consider these lobsters very shelter restricted. They live in and amongst habitat that allows them to either filter feed directly from the water or do very short foraging behaviors. It's when you think of cobble environment, it's not just a bunch of rocks stacked on top of each other. Actually, that is generally, when we find a habitat that, or something that we're going to sample, that it's just a pile of rocks bare, we can almost assume that that's going to be very poor habitat for lobster. It's when that cobble is mixed in with the sediments, and you turn it over, and there's worms and other crabs underneath the rocks, then you've got a good chance of finding a post larvae or a newly settled lobster in those cobble environments. So it's not just clean cobble, I guess, is the preferred habitat. As they grow, then they start to forage out into other habitats. Shelter can come in a lot of different ways. So along the coast of Maine, where we have a lot of rocks, we tend to find them in the rocks. In Massachusetts, where shelter is limited as far as rocks, they actually find them in peat marshes, burrowed into the sides of peat marshes, or in some of the what you'd call the ice raft chunks that get floated off into the marsh. You'll find them kind of hiding underneath there as well. So they'll take shelter wherever they can find it, not necessarily just in the rocks. And then as they get larger, then they start to move more on a daily and on an annual basis, and then you get an adult and mature lobsters that can move anywhere from a mile a day. They've also been tagged and have moved over 300 miles over 365 days. So they can really get up and move when they want to. Generally, movement scales with size. So I think that might be the end.
So the illegal sized lobster would be between the juvenile and the mating, or the mating and the oviparous?
Yeah, so the size of maturity is actually larger than our minimum size. So only about 15% or so of lobsters that are eligible to be landed are actually mature. And so there's different regulations in place that allow what lobsters are mature to kind of stay in the system. Mm-hmm. So it's about probably a 7-year-old lobster at the time of the first harvest are coming in.
All right.
So,
great.
I don't think I've got any more slides than that. Okay. So yeah, that was just trying to give an overview, the context mm-hmm. to me is, I think we're concentrating on sediments. There was a conversation about water as well. With our recent conversations about mercury in the penobscot, and it's heavy metals in this case, but uptake just through the water was found to be as significant as uptake through the sediments or through diet. And that kind of, I didn't realize that potential existed.
Well, the bioconcentration thing is critical when you're talking about some of these compounds.
Bioconcentration in?
Yeah. In whatever, fish, lobster.
Magnifying or?
Yeah, biomagnification.
Yeah.
We will be addressing that.
It's really, it's compound specific though. You know,
right.
Different pesticides act differently. Some accumulate and some might not, just because like you might not find anything in a tissue doesn't mean obviously an organism hasn't been exposed and affected. So certain things will bioaccumulate and others won't, because they just get broken down and pass through the system. And lobsters happen to be really good at metabolizing things.
I guess I was just surprised that I would have thought that diet would have been for heavy metals would have been the primary uptake, and through the gills was found to be just as high.
And that's classic, especially when you're talking about mercury. This has nothing to do with pesticides,
yeah.
But what happens with the mercury is the coal-burning energy plants in the Midwest tend to send the mercury waste up into the environment, and they drop down on the main waters, and the fish pick it up through the gills.
But you know, Carl, metals sometimes are soluble and sometimes they're not. It depends on their oxidation state.
And what they're attached to.
You know, because
I'm just saying, I was surprised
yeah.
that it was uptake in the water, and so is that something that that we should be taking through? Is it in the sediment, but also is it in the water?
Well, here's another thing, is suspended sediments. You know, like how it gets there. For things like pyrethroids that are pesticides like pyrethroids that are very particle reactive, they really, you know, that was the attraction of pyrethroids, is that they don't migrate off site very easily. But they're found, like on the West Coast, with a lot of ag water, you know, ag fields, ag water run into ag drains and then drain into water bodies that. Suspended particles are a large mode of convection off land into water.
And if I remember from our dimelin conversations, it was also they dimelin at that point would attach on to organic matter coming through the streams or in runoff, and so that also changes some of the persistence of some of the chemicals.
We will be getting into that in detail.
Good.
You
don't want to try to...
Not today.
Okay. Well, awesome. The only thing I would add is that you said seeking shelter, that's particularly true right after the molt, where they're most susceptible to predation, and they want to be close to some place where they can crawl away and be safe from getting crunched, because they are very susceptible. The other thing I would add is that the juveniles that I've seen in the area around the Darling Center oftentimes go to a grass bed and form burrows in the sediment. And those burrows can be, maybe up to your elbow deep to reach into them and pull them out. But they do, as juveniles, spend a fair amount of time in burrows, even in the Gulf of Maine. I know that they do that quite a bit down in the Long Island Sound area, but the fact that we've got not only rock, but sediment to burrow into is, I think, part of the picture in Maine. That's, I have that.